Good morning. It is 7:41. This is KDNK, and it is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Wednesday morning, January 25th. I'm Steve Cole. Carbondale Town Trustees voted last night on who will take over the empty seat on the board. News Director Gavin Dahl reports.
At Tuesday night's meeting, Carbondale Trustees voted to add Erica Sparhawk to the board. Her term will last until the next local election in 2018. I had a chance to ask Erica a few quick questions just after she learned she'd been selected.
Well, I'm excited for the opportunity to work for my community that I love so much, and I also think this is a great group of trustees to work with and that we'll be able to get a lot done.
Before interviewing applicants, the trustees shared their top priorities for 2017: affordable housing, environmental stewardship, infrastructure planning, and transportation. What's your reaction to those kind of collective goals of the current trustees, and what about your goals?
I think the goals they talked about are a lot of the goals of the community that are raised regularly, either at public meetings or in initiatives that people are working on. And I would echo them. I mean, I think housing is something that we need to tackle, and all kinds of groups are trying to tackle it and bringing proposals forward. And then how are we going to fund, you know, the question that Marty asked me, how are we going to fund just our basic infrastructure and any initiatives that people want the town to take a lead on? We really need to dial in, how are we going to get that funding?
You grew up in Carbondale. What do you love most about Carbondale?
Oh, so can I tell you a funny story? When I was deciding to move back to Carbondale, my husband and I made a list of things we loved about Carbondale. KDNK was on the list.
Thank you.
Along with really incredible arts, Carbondale arts, and really great Mexican food. We love La Roca, the tortilleria, and the carniceria right next door, Valley Meats. And then my family came in after that. just kidding, family. But, you know, it was the components that make up the community, and then the access to outdoors really solidified it for us to want to move back and why we plan on staying here.
Thanks so much for talking to us.
You're welcome.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
A bill that would allow businesses and individuals to pick and choose which laws to obey based on their religious beliefs is back again at the state legislature. Eric Galatis reports.
A group of Colorado state lawmakers is hoping the third time will be the charm for passing so-called religious freedom legislation. A House committee is scheduled to consider a bill today similar to measures introduced in the past two sessions that supporters claim is necessary to keep the state from putting a burden on a person's exercise of religion. Daniel Ramos with the group One Colorado says the law would effectively roll back key protections for LGBTQ and other communities.
We too believe that the freedom of religion is important, and that's why it's already protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution. But this law would allow any individual or any business to pick and choose which laws to follow and claim that their religion allows them to do so.
Ramos says if passed, the law would allow a high school counselor to turn away a gay teenager seeking help, or a pharmacist to refuse to fill prescriptions for birth control pills by citing religious beliefs. The measure is co-sponsored by Republican Representative Stephen Humphrey from Weld County and Dave Williams of El Paso County. Colorado House Bill 1013 is similar to controversial laws recently passed by other states, including Indiana under then-Governor Mike Pence and North Carolina. Ramos says allowing businesses and individuals to discriminate against people who don't share their religious views would be bad news for Colorado's economy.
In Indiana alone, they lost $60 million in conference revenue. And when a similar bill was introduced and being considered in Georgia, they were projecting that they would lose upwards of $2 billion in economic activity.
Ramos adds the measure would allow individuals to claim that any number of laws, including child labor, domestic violence, and non-discrimination laws, don't apply to them if they conflict with their faith. HB 1013 is set to be heard today in the House State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
Roaring Fork Valley residents, mostly women, boarded two buses in Glenwood Springs at 5 a.m. Saturday, headed to the Women's March on Denver. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh rode along and asked some of the passengers why they were participating.
110 people represented the Roaring Fork Valley at the Women's March on Denver last weekend. The buses left the Glenwood Springs Mall at 5:19 a.m. before sunrise. I spoke with several passengers before and after the march. Here are a few voices.
My name is Emmy Lerma. I live in Glenwood Springs. I gladly got up at 4 o'clock this morning because I'm feeling the overwhelming connectedness with thousands of other people who really want to express their discontent with the direction our country has chosen to go. Well, being a girl of the 60s, I see us kind of, I know it's probably more like a spiral, but it's a spiraling backwards in terms of our consciousness, perhaps, and our consent with one another, how we will be behaving with one another. I regret that, and I feel as an elder now in our society, I want to remember and help others remember that we do live in a country where we need to be speaking up and we need to listen to one another.
Okay, Carol Oaksner. I live in technically Carbondale, but really the Elgibel area. I want to participate in the positive of moving forward. Personally, I do not want to be a we and they. I want to practice inclusivity, and I have a difficult time not playing into that in my own thinking. So this is the beginning step of taking that action.
I'm Diana Alcantara. I'm from Carbondale, Colorado, in the Roaring Fork Valley. And I was inspired to get up this morning early, Saturday, January 21st. Really ignited by the movement and the momentum that Standing Rock. And so today, I'm coming out with all these beautiful women, strong women, hear their voices, and marching through the streets of downtown Denver to hear their story. We've never seen someone like Trump in the White House and his background. And what does that mean for our nation? Is our country a business? Is that the direction we want to take? I don't think so. So I'm interested to hear what everyone has to say today. And then what's next? What do we do next?
Chrissy Leonard. I'm the other Chris Leonard in Carbondale. This country is in dire straits with our new president. And we all matter and we all make a difference. But we need to be out there. We've let our democracy go by the wayside because we've become very complacent, because we haven't needed to stand up. I mean, I grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s in the San Francisco Bay Area. We marched then, we protested, and you know what? It made a difference. That's how we got out of the Vietnam War.
What's next for you?
I don't know. I've been writing a lot of letters and making phone calls, which I never did before. And I don't know. We'll just see what happens.
Kendall Henry. And I live in Glenwood Springs. I'm Midland. I think having Trump being elected president of our country was a real wake-up call, and that we need to stand up for what we believe and make him and the rest of his Republican Party accountable. And somehow, I hope by his actions that people will see the real Donald Trump, and that he won't last his 4 years. I really hope that happens.
My name is Vini Lilly. I live in Newcastle.
Wow. I have been active politically since the late 60s, and I have always fought for issues of unfairness, and this was a hugely unfair situation, meaning the election, the agenda, the assignment of the goons at the cabinet. Congress, it's just infuriating. We had a really good president prior to this one who tried really hard to turn this world around and change politics. And he was undermined from beginning to end. And to me, that's an injustice, and I cannot tolerate that. So it fired me up. And I'm like, we need a grassroots effort again, and that's how we're going to change this. That's the only way we're going to change it.
My name is Clara McDougall. I'm from Woody Creek. I got out of bed at 3 o'clock this morning because even though we can't do anything about President Trump at this point, we can show our solidarity. And I think it's really, really important for women to speak up against the male hierarchy. And all we keep getting is male hierarchy. For 2,000 years, that's all we've had is male hierarchy. So now is the time for change.
For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh on the bus to the Women's March on Denver.
KDNK interviewed demonstrators in D.C., Denver, and Carbondale on Saturday. Tune into a special edition of Valley Voices tomorrow from 4 to 5 p.m. for local, regional, and national perspectives on the marches and the new administration. A controversial measure that would encourage schools to offer gun training for security guards and could pave the way for teachers to have guns in schools cleared its first committee on Tuesday. Benda Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Supporters of Senate Bill 5 are adamant that this legislation won't put more guns in schools. Instead, they say it would simply allow school employees to take a handgun safety training course from a county sheriff, since sheriffs are already involved in emergency school response plans.
Who better to offer this training and just help work with the school district to decide what should be involved in that training?
Senate Majority Leader Chris Hulbert from Parker is sponsoring the legislation.
If there are people who work in the schools, teachers or other staff, who want to be armed, then this would also contribute to them being trained.
Right now, Colorado has a statewide ban on firearms in K-12 schools. Law enforcement and private security are the exceptions. Some school districts get around that rule by allowing teachers and other staff to work as, quote, private security, so they can conceal carry in the classroom. Hulbert says schools aren't required to report that information.
For people who come through this program, they wouldn't have to be hired as private security.
And that's the sticking point for people who testified against the proposal in the Senate State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee. Arvada mother Jerry Barella doesn't believe any amount of training could make guns safe in schools. Her son was accidentally shot by a friend at a party. She says a training course won't correct human behavior.
Until there is a gun training course that will guarantee us 100% that a teacher or principal or other person will never have a bad day, will never have a lapse of good judgment, will never react impulsively to a student's misbehavior or disrespect, we cannot allow this bill to pass. It is the open door to more tragedy.
Even if it passes, the bill isn't mandatory, so school districts wouldn't be required to offer the training. Hulbert says while he wants to encourage more training, he doesn't want to force it on school districts.
I really want to be a champion and respect local control when it comes to our school districts.
But that doesn't comfort Ken Toltz from Boulder. He's with the nonprofit group Safe Campus Colorado, a gun violence prevention organization. He calls the measure a new twist on a bad idea.
Every year, the sponsor of these bills present zero data, zero evidence, and zero examples of the need or demand for this risky and dangerous experiment in school security.
While Republicans on the committee all voted for the measure, Democrats, including Senator Lois Cord of Denver, were against it.
I disagree that more guns in schools makes our schools safer. And making a statement by passing this law seems to me to say that's what we believe.
That ideological difference is the main reason gun issues at the Capitol become so heated and partisan. So while the measure will easily clear the Republican-controlled Senate, it's likely to be defeated in the Democratic House. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.